Hello and welcome back to the second class in our little crash course on the 39 prohibited categories of created labor. God willing, we'll be covering three of the main categories, three of the 39. We covered two in the last course. Today we'll be covering kotzer, we'll be covering dash, and we'll be covering in between, sorry, hamamer. So let's get started. V'hakotzer. So following along the same line in the order of the making of bread, we come to reaping. As you recall, everything in this order is connected to the concept of preparing grains or preparing various herbs that are necessary for making the dyes, or as we said, in terms of grains, in order to prepare the lechem hapanim, in order to be able to prepare the showbread that was used in the Mishkan. And understanding that the 39 melachot, the 39 prohibited categories of creative labor, are all connected to what was done in the construction of the Mishkan, construction of the tabernacle. So this next piece, reaping, what exactly is it? Cutting off any living vegetation, whole or part, from its source of growth. As we said, very often the category is just that, it's a category. It doesn't necessarily mean to say that the name of that category is its full and total definition, but rather that its category is the place where everything similar all fits. So everything that fits in here has to do with cutting off, killing living vegetation, now that's whole or part of it, from its source of growth. So immediately, for example, coming to our mind is picking a fruit from a tree certainly comes under this category. As you go ahead and you pluck off the fruit from the tree, you are separating it from its source of life. For example, though, what wouldn't be included in this would be something similar, such as plucking off a grape from a vine that's sitting in your bowl. I mean, that's already been plucked away from its source of life. So as we did before, let's start out with the do's. What can you do? Well, when it comes to this concept of reaping, meaning killing vegetation, well, you can pour alcohol on a plant that will damage it, then inhibit its growth, but not kill it. What this means to say is that the idea of reaping, meaning of killing plants, is not the total opposite of what we saw last time, meaning sowing, zorea, because of the fact that there, any form of additional support and help to a plant to grow would be included in that form of prohibition. So here, not any form of inhibition to its growth, but only actual death, actual severance from the source is considered to be a form of kotzer. Practically speaking, where do we see this? Well, if you recall, we mentioned that it's not a real good idea to have picnics on the grass because of the fact that while you're having this little picnic, the various liquids that you'll be serving there would fall over and water the grass. Well, when it comes to alcohol or strong wines or things like that, they actually inhibit the growth of the grass. And therefore, sitting out in your lawn on a little lounge chair drinking a beer with your buddies would not be a real problem, meaning you wouldn't have to worry about zorea and you wouldn't have to worry about kotzer. So if that is going to make your Shabbat Oneg, to sit down around in a group, drink a beer, and talk some Divrei Torah and the tales of the Tzaddikim, good luck and have a good time. Now, what else is included in this is, well, turning off a manual sprinkler. That's okay. The reason it's okay is because when you turn off the sprinkler head, and of course we're talking not one that has a little electronic timer and all these other things, but I'm just turning off the nozzle, in other words, preventing the water from continuing to flow on the grass. What ends up happening there is you're just preventing additional growth, but you're not killing it, you're not causing any damage. Just as a point of warning, by the way, there are some forms of sprinkler systems that when you turn them off, what they do is they recede and you begin to water parts of the grass that are not saturated and have not been watered before, and that would be asur, that would be not allowed. But generally speaking, turning off a manual sprinkler is not a problem. Closing the shades in front of a plant. And now, if you recall in the last class, opening up shades specifically to give light to a plant, that would be asur, that would not be allowed. But closing the shades in front of a plant, that would be okay. And again, the idea here is you're just preventing additional growth. Lifting potatoes, even if budding but not rooted, up off a damp floor. Well, you see, the idea here is that when we talk about reaping, it's cutting off from a source, meaning when the plant takes root into the ground. So if you go ahead and you pull it out of the ground, you've removed it from its source. The fact that there's a little bit of liquid that just happened to spawn off the buds is not a problem. In other words, we don't look at that as being an issue, and you'd be allowed. Now, potatoes probably is a really bad example here, though, because, well, potatoes are muksa because they're raw. You can't eat them the way they are. But let's say it was something like a carrot or a radish or something else like that that began to sprout roots of the same sort of, like, not an issue. Until it's actually taken hold of the ground, there's no problem here. Walking on grass. Now, this is not an issue. That's perfectly okay. The fact that you may be walking on the grass, and as you're walking along, you may occasionally come to uproot a blade of grass here, a blade of grass there, that doesn't create a problem. Now, I'll explain to you, there's a general principle in the halachot of Shabbat that permits such a thing. And in other words, that allows such a situation to happen. Here, you see, it's not 100% vadai. It's not 100% sure that every time you walk on the grass that it's going to cause destruction to the grass. And you don't want the grass to be destroyed. So the combination of two factors. Number one, it's not 100% that it's going to happen. And the fact that you don't even want it to happen. And therefore, the combined factor of the two means to say that you don't have to worry about the fact that if every once in a while a little bit of grass is going to come up during your walking, that's no problem. But now, let's say you had a situation that's a little different, like when we talked about last week. Let's say you went ahead and you were going to drag a heavy object, such as a heavy table, through your backyard in where there's a nice patch of soft dirt. Well, it's 100% for sure that you could be making a ditch using that table. If that's the case, then it's 100% asur, meaning you can't do it. Even though you had no intentions of doing something which was asur on Shabbat, something which is not allowed, the fact that it will happen based on your actions directly means that it's asur, means that it cannot be done. But here again, two factors. Number one, you don't intend it. There's no interest in this happening. And the second factor, which is that, again, it's not 100%. The two factors together avoid what's called melechet machshevet, meaning that everything on Shabbat, in terms of what is asur, has to be done in this intentional, direct fashion in order to be a direct and total violation of the law. Partial violations are rabbinically forbidden as well, but the point is that if you can remove, with a number of factors, any connection of the action and the mind to direct cause of something which is asur, it ends up opening the door to the possibility of it being permitted. Additionally, one of the things that ends up being forbidden from a rabbinical standpoint as a result of kotzer, as a result of reaping, is that you can't make use of a tree. Meaning the tree itself becomes a sword. You're not allowed to climb a tree. You're not allowed to hang anything on a tree. You're not allowed to make use of that tree in any real way. If you happen to have gone ahead and thrown your jacket over the tree before Shabbat, then that ends up being a problem. Now you can't take it off on Shabbat. In fact, actually, there's a gzerah, there's a rule from the rabbis, that if a person was to, on purpose, knowing that he's not allowed to do this, climb a tree, he wouldn't be allowed to climb down on Shabbat. Of course, though, once he needed to use the restroom, though, he would be allowed to. So I don't know how practical this ends up being, but it's the point, and that is that you can't do this, and the rabbis made a knas, they made a punishment preventing you from doing that. But what you can do, though, in terms of a tree, is use the side of something attached to a tree. Well, what do I mean by that? Is that you can remove a hanging basket from a peg which is in the tree. So what we're talking about is something which is a combination of things. In other words, one thing connected to another thing connected to another thing, and then everything becomes all right, meaning that you can remove the hanging basket which is on the peg. Incidentally, by the way, it does mean to say that what? That you cannot jump inside of a swing that's attached to a tree, and you can't lay down on a hammock that's attached to a tree. All that is considered to be part and parcel of the same isur, of the same prohibition. Now, we've gone through the do's, meaning things you can do. Let's go through a couple of don'ts when it's connected to kotzer. Well, what you can't do is pick a fruit from a tree, which you already said before. Now, here in Florida, this certainly applies. You might be sitting in your backyard and notice a little patch of green inside your pool on the walls. You can't scrape algae off the walls of your pool. No, can't do that. kick over mushrooms. I know everybody's just dying to kick over those little mushrooms that pop up after every rain over here in Florida, but you can't do that. You can't intentionally go over there and kick them off the ground. Now, what makes this interesting is that, generally speaking, halacha works out that mushroom in general is not considered to be something grown from the ground. For example, the blessing that's actually made on a mushroom is a shehakol, and it's the same bracha you're making on candy or anything else that actually did not grow. So, in this particular case, though, which didn't grow from the ground, but in this case, it is considered to be growing from the ground for this particular law because of the fact that being connected to the ground gives it a sustenance. So, in that regard, you cannot tear mushrooms off the ground, off the walls, off the roof, off the side of your car, hopefully not off of anything else more important. Certainly not your bathrooms, whatever else. That should have been cleaned before Shabbat and before you took the shower. Anyways, lifting a potted plant off the ground. This is also a problem. If you remember in the last shiur, we talked about the idea that when you take a potted plant and you place it over the ground, that this is a sur. This is not allowed because there's a certain connection of the ground and the plant, even if they're not actually planted into the ground. There's all kinds of neat things that exist in terms of various tropisms, ways that plants move and react to everything from gravity to the sun to motion, etc. I may not know necessarily exactly how this works, but the point is that, again, lifting a potted plant off the ground does separate it from its connection, and that would not be allowed. Now, a person would also not be allowed to walk on a flower bed or through thistles, meaning where there's brittle plants. If you walk through a flower bed, what you're going to end up doing is crushing your poor little flowers. And the thistles, they'll end up cracking and breaking. It's a guaranteed situation. You're going to go through there, there's going to be damage. And therefore, it's not allowed. Along the same vein, the person can't go around kicking weeds to let out pollen and little dandelions and all these other cute little things in the ground. No, you can't go and destroy them, not on Shabbat. This is still a problem. Now, even though you might argue that the little milkweedy things and all this other stuff is already separated from the plant and just waiting to be blown by the wind, nevertheless, it is still an issue, meaning that it's still connected enough that from a halachic perspective, you can't be doing this. Now, you cannot smell fruits that are still attached to the tree. Similar situation. You might come to, smells good, and pluck it, and that's a problem. The same goes for nice little rose bushes and whatever else have you. You can't go around smelling them while they're on the bush. Now, once they're cut off, that's another story, but while they're still attached, no. What you also can't do is handle eat fruits that fell from a tree on Shabbat. See, what happens is when the fruits and the so forth have fallen from the tree on Shabbat, you may come over and you pick them up and you eat them and say, gee, that's delicious, why don't I get a little bit more? And you might think and inadvertently just put your hand up and grab another beautiful tasting fruit. Therefore, the fruits that fall from a tree on Shabbat cannot be eaten on Shabbat. After Shabbat, no problem. Now, a person also can't do something which is very interesting. In other words, most people don't realize the connection that you can't ride a horse on Shabbat, and that's directly connected to reaping. Now, it's not just horses, it's any animals for that matter. And the idea is, of course, today it may not be so familiar to us as we prefer Jeeps and Land Rovers and vehicles and whatever else have you to the horse. But in the old days, the Rough Riders rode horses. And when they would be going through, they would go ahead and they would pull off branches from a tree because they wanted to go faster to break it off and give a little bit of a switch to the side of the horse and get him moving. So therefore, the Rabbanim made a prohibition of getting on the back of the horse. And there may be other reasons why this is a problem, but the kigzera here in relation to kotzer is that you might come to break off one of those switches and hit the horse. What you also can't do is you can't pull a honeycomb out from the hive. Of course, I don't know how many of us are going to be sticking our hands into beehives, but the point is that the detaching of the honeycomb from the actual hive of the bees is also related to this idea of kotzer of reaping. It is a rabbinical gzera, but the fact that it, in a sense, seems to grow from the ground or be of the same sort of nature, the Rabbanim felt that it would be appropriate to tell us to avoid doing this. Now, continuing along the same lines, we're going to the next of our melachot, the next of our creative labors, and that is Veha Ma'amer, continuing with the language of the Mishnah, binding sheaves, gathering. So what is prohibited in this case? Collecting together scattered items in their original state that grew from the ground where they are normally gathered, including, well, this sounds awfully confusing, but let's put it into simple terms. You cannot collect fruits together near the tree. In addition to that, there is another more practical example, since most of us today, well, okay, perhaps here in Florida you may have situations like this, orange trees and whatever else have you in your backyard, if they haven't been cut down because of the whole canker thingy. What happens is you'll be putting together these oranges and so forth, but the point is you can't collect them while they're near the tree into a pile in order to be able to then bring them in or whatever else have you. And the idea here is that, of course, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, as they'd be preparing the grains, they would cut them out in the field, and then they would have to collect them to bring them in. So it's the collection process that becomes asur in this particular case, not prohibited. See, prohibited. And so in addition to that, something more practical is the pressing together of dates. See, dates are collected from the trees and whatever else have you, but they're not actually put together for delivery or movement until they've been pressed together or strung together, and therefore that's included here in this Isurin, which is not allowed. So what can you do? Well, you can collect peanuts that fell on your marble floor or anything else like that, because it doesn't apply. It's not the same law here. You could pick up fruit into your hand off the floor to eat or use, meaning, you know, you're just going to pick up one fruit, even if, in other words, if you have a collection of fruits that are sitting, even though it's near the tree or whatever else have you, of course you know it's not from what fell on Shabbat, it's been set aside from before Shabbat, and you want to eat one of those fruits, that's okay, not a problem. In other words, you're picking it up and you're eating it, you're not collecting it. It's when you got two or more that you start putting together that things become a problem. So what can't you do? On a very practical term, you can't rake together leaves. Now, if you rake them together for the purpose of making a compost heap, what you've done is some form of constructive labor, and therefore you violated the positive commandment of the Torah. The negative commandment and the positive in this case, but you've violated the Torah commandment. But if you would go ahead and collect together all of the leaves that are sitting around, and you just, the purpose of this was just to throw them away, then you've done something destructive, not creative. So in this case, it's only asur, it's only forbidden from a rabbinical standpoint. But either way, raking together leaves, one way or another, is not allowed. Now, what also you can't do is you're outside, and let's say you have a nut tree or a little orange tree, anything else like that, and they're all sitting in your way. You can't go and start kicking the oranges into a pile to make room so that you can be able to put your lounge tree underneath the orange tree or anything else like that. And you can't make piles around the tree. What you also can't do is make a bouquet of flowers. Now, as we said before, if you have flowers in a vase and that sort of thing, and they fall out, since it's already in the vase, you can put them back, and so forth and so on. But this is all cut flowers already prepared. But what you can't do is make a fresh bouquet of flowers, even if they're already cut and separate. You can't put them together. In other words, you can't make a bouquet and stick them into your vase or whatever else have you on Shabbat. In fact, even if each one of the flowers was separately in a separate little vase, therefore they were getting watered, but you wouldn't be able to take each one of the separate flowers and bring them together and then stick them into a single vase, because that would be a violation of Ma'amer, of gathering together. Now, included in this is going to be even artificial flowers. And the reason is because artificial flowers being bundled together will look just like real flowers bundled together. There is a Torah obligation that we must always do our best to present ourselves in a way that would reasonably be construed as being clean from all sin. What comes out from that is that we try and avoid something called maret ha'ayin. We try and avoid creating a situation where we would appear to be sinning. So there's a positive command that we have to look clean of sin, and that results in us avoiding, in other words, the possibility of somebody seeing something we're doing as being sinful. So, for example, what about this idea of the benefit of the doubt? Well, the idea is we're supposed to give somebody reasonable benefit of the doubt. So therefore, we can't create a mikshol, we can't create a stumbling block for them by doing something that would reasonably look wrong. So it all kind of ties in together. We have to reasonably always appear in the best of spiritual health. That means to say that in this case, for example, as you can see, the bouquet of flowers putting together is not allowed, so therefore even a fake bouquet of flowers would not be allowed. Now, in addition to that, there are some Rabbonim, there are some poskim out there that forbid stringing together diamonds. Since diamonds and various other natural type rocks, they look like they sort of grow from the ground. And because of that, they become included in this same prohibition, and therefore stringing them together is sort of like putting together pressing together a string of dates. Okay, so in addition to that, collecting sea salt deposits. So in addition to that is collecting sea salt deposits. Putting together in other words, in the old days, when they wanted to collect salt from the sea, what they would do is they'd create this sort of wooden frame on the banks, and the water would go ahead and collect into these wooden frames. And then over the course of the day, in other words, after the water receded and the tides and so forth, it would sit there and the sun would bake on that water, and the salt would then be left behind and would sort of be raked together and collected into little piles. So because of the fact that this looks like something that's growing from the sea, growing from the ground, therefore it was included in this prohibition of not being able to gather things together around near the source. Therefore collecting sea salt deposits would be asur, would be prohibited. Now, I know there's none of you running out there to do this, but in case you had that idea, don't do it. Anyways, next, we get into the next of the prohibitions, the third for this evening, dash, threshing. So, let's talk about what threshing is, since not too many of us are out there processing grains on a regular basis. Threshing is after they would go ahead and collect the bundles of grains together, the sheaths that have the grains in them and so forth, they would bring them all together to a threshing floor, nice hard floor someplace. Now what happens is that the grains, the little kernels that make that nice whole wheat bread and everything else we enjoy, that has around it the chaff that's got all this material, this hard material that surrounds it. So you go ahead and you put it onto the ground, and you beat it with a long wooden stick with a little roll, kind of like a big nunchuck kind of thing, and they would hit it one after another, or they would stomp on it or go over it with animals and all kinds of other things. Again, the point here is to crack open the hard outside and therefore allow for the extraction of the nice inside. So therefore what we get from this is the removal of anything grown from the earth from its natural inedible casing, that includes breaking kernels from the stems and chaff, or removing flax fibers from their husks, meaning breaking them open. Flax kind of grows like these big, tall, hard grasses, and you kind of break them open, and there's this sort of milky, white, kind of long, fibrous materials inside, and you pull them out. Now, in addition to this major category, which is, again, taking the edible out of the inedible casings, what we also find is something called mefarik. Mefarik is extracting, even in a case that you're not using an implement or the feet, meaning, because dash, meaning threshing itself, as we saw, had the specialized implement that was used, or you used your feet. What about everything else? Well, everything else is still included in the asur. It's still asur, but it's secondary in its category. It's a tolda. In other words, it's a secondary category, and this category is called mefarik, extracting. So included from this is anything which is extracting. So that means expressing milk, be it from an animal or from oneself, if they are a lactating mother, crushing a honeycomb. Again, you're going to crush this, causing the extraction of the honey from the wax. Removing peas from a pod. And again, the key here is that you're using your hands, what have you. And also is squeezing fruit to remove the juices, leaving behind the pulp. So all those things are included in this idea of extracting. Well, what can we do now? So that we're looking at dash, looking at this whole body of what's asur. What we can do, I was like doing the positive first. Well, you can peel fruits and vegetables, even though it seems like this is really similar, meaning that when the peels are attached to the fruit, that it seems like you've got this sort of a husk material and a nice juicy, meaty, nice stuff inside. Nevertheless, there's something a little different here. And that is that the peels of the fruits and the vegetables are attached. It's not a separate thing, but an attached entity. And therefore, when you're peeling them off, you're actually peeling away part of the material and leaving behind everything. But you're, again, it's an attached part and parcel of it. So that's okay, and that's permissible. Opening nuts is okay, but you know there is something when nuts grow in the wild. They actually have like a nice greenish or different color types of fleshy outer part that we never really see in our local supermarkets. This little outer part that goes around the shell, that though on the other hand would not be allowed to be opened. In other words, that would be similar to the idea of, again, the pod of the pea or the chaff around the kernel. But the actual hard nuts that we have, they can be broken open, and you can take out the nice meaty part and enjoy it on Shabbat. Incidentally, by the way, there are some people who hold that peanuts can't be opened on Shabbat. The general custom is, in fact, to allow it, but it really is not that much different than peas in a pod. In fact, they are peas in a pod, just another type of pea in a pod. But nevertheless, the custom is generally to accept doing that, but it's always better to have honey-roasted peanuts. Definitely better. Much better tasting. So on Shabbat, stick with the honey-roasted, okay, or at least already open and salted. It's a much better way to go, but either way, it's okay. Now, eat corn on the cob, that's okay, not a problem. Squeeze... So, squeezing fruit juice other than olives and grapes, that is permitted, onto solid food to absorb the juice. So, for example, if you want to go ahead and squeeze a little lemon juice onto your fish, again, so the nice breading of that heavily crusted fried fish is going to absorb all that juice, that's okay, no problem. That's permitted. The olives and grapes are a special case, and they're not allowed, because of the fact that they're specifically grown for the purpose of juicing. And because of that, therefore, anything that's going to lead to juicing them in any way is not going to be permitted. So for that matter, a person is not really, really should avoid cutting in any way grapes or olives or anything else like that. The exception would be if using a sawing motion to the olives or whatever else have you, or the grapes, over, say, a salad or something like that. So again, it would just fall right in the sawing action to avoid any pressing of the actual olives. Or let's say you had a child, well, you'd be able to cut it over a napkin or else have you. This way the juice would be absorbed into the napkin, and again, you'd be able to take, again, using a sawing motion, you'd hand that to the child or else have you. But really, olives and grapes, as much as I even know my children like it, very dangerous. Be careful. For children, it's not a great way to go, unless, again, during the week you can cut them up real small or something like that. Well, what you can also do, though, is even though you can't squeeze the juice into a bowl or something, have you, what you can do is suck the juice from a fruit. Now, this is other than olives and grapes. You can't put a grape to your mouth and just suck out the juices, peel a grape or anything else like that. What you would be allowed to do is stick the grapes in your mouth and chew them and eat them and enjoy them. But, again, anything else, other fruits, for example, sticking an orange and putting a little bite in it and then squeezing and sucking the juice into your mouth is perfectly okay. What you also can do is squeeze out those greasy latkes. You know, we have one of those latkes just teeming in grease. Not a problem. You can go ahead and save your heart. You can take some napkins and squeeze them on top of the latke and go ahead and separate out. Now, be careful, though. You just want me to squeeze the latke a little bit and collect the juice. I don't mean to say that you squeeze the napkin in a way that's going to cause the napkin to release juices just enough to be able to pat it out. What you also can do is discard extra pickle juice. What you can do is squeeze out a pickle. See, the juices that are inside of a pickle, those are not its own juices, and you don't want to be saving pickle juice. At least I certainly hope you don't want to be saving pickle juice. And so the point is that you're going to discard whatever's in it, and it's not its own juice, so therefore squeezing a pickle to remove the extra juice is okay. Now, you see, if you had a rag, for example, and that got filled with liquids, so you might say that's not its own juice, but that you can't squeeze. And the reason is because the squeezing of a rag is generally to collect juices, meaning to collect the liquids someplace, right? Especially in the old days when things were a little less wasteful. If a little bit of oil spilled on your counter, you would go ahead and soak it up with a rag and then collect that oil someplace else. In other words, you'd wring out the rag and collect and save that for being able to fry up more latkes. So, on top of that, what you could do is sop up a spill with paper napkins or rags. In other words, if you have a rag that you don't care anything about and you have a napkin, you can go ahead and, let's say you had a spill, you can put that on there. Again, you shouldn't squeeze anything, but you can still put it on top and let it soak up a little bit and then go ahead and throw them out when you're done or put it aside for cleaning afterwards, the rags. Now, if you have a clear spill, you got to be careful not to use any nice towels or anything like that, because actually then you'd be cleaning the towel. Meaning if that towel is something that you wouldn't want to get dirty, then you shouldn't be using it to clean up any spills, not on Shabbat. What you can also do is wash dishes with a stiff brush. In other words, one that's got nice firm hairs on it. And the idea is like this. You see, even though there's something called capillary reaction, or capillary action, excuse me, where the water sort of adheres to the sides and it kind of collects. And in fact, that is the case, that if you have any kind of like a, you know, hair-like or bushy-type material, or for example, like steel wool, it's not exactly a sponge or something, but it absorbs water, you wouldn't be allowed to use that to clean your dishes, because that would absorb the liquid, and when you squeeze to clean, that would squeeze out the liquids again. So you wouldn't be allowed to do that. Certainly can't use a sponge to clean your dishes or whatever else have you on Shabbat. So a hard brush, or for example, one of those little plastic ring-style pads, those would be allowed. Now, how do you know what's allowed, and how do you know when something is allowed? So it's kind of like this. If you go ahead and you stick, let's say, one of those plastic spongy type things, it's all plastic rings together in a bunch, and you stick it in water and you pull it out, if the water runs right out of it, now there might be a little bit of water left inside of the spongy thingy, but what happens is it's generally all drained out, it's not really anything really being held into it, then you know that that particular brush or that particular plastic thing would be okay to use on Shabbat, because it's not, there's not any sponging action. But again, a hard bristle brush or one of these plastic type things could be used then to clean your dishes and whatever else have you on Shabbat. Not a problem. But again, steel wool's a problem, and so would, for that matter, would be any kind of sponges or rags, and you have to be careful about that, because again, you'd be squeezing if you use it. What you'd also be allowed to do is express milk into the sink. If a woman's having pain for some reason, or whatever else have you, as we said, you can't collect milk. In other words, you can't go ahead and collect into bottles or something for the future, giving to your child or anything else. Unless, of course, there's health reasons. Certainly, if you have health problems, I mean, the baby has health problems, you should speak to a rabbi about exactly how to deal with that in terms of this issue. But under normal circumstances, if the woman's in a little bit of discomfort, what she can do is express the milk into a sink or whatever else have you. And it does just waste it, and that would be fine. It's the squeezing of the milking and collecting of milk that together. Okay, what you also can do is put ice cubes in your drink or hot soup. The reason this comes up is because you can't take ice and crush it into a liquid. That's sort of just like squeezing. Seems like that. So therefore, risuk, meaning the crushing of sheleg of snow, is one of those things that a person that is included in the gzera, meaning is a rabbinical law that's connected to this, you can't do. But putting ice cubes into your drink, now that even includes hot drinks. It's not a problem if they're going to melt. I'm not saying that you pour hot drinks onto ice cubes. I'm just saying that if you have a hot drink and you want to stick an ice cube in, that's all right. You could also even crush a few ice cubes to, you know, you want it to stick directly into your drink. In other words, we're not talking about collecting the water, but you're just breaking them up so they fit. You know, or as kids, we used to break up the ice cubes, and this way we can stick them into our bottles of soda or our cans of soda, and then we have the ice inside the can. So that would be okay. What you can also do is urinate on the snow. Not a problem. Completely destructive act here. What you can also do is walk on snow. That's okay. And, of course, being a Floridian, all this stuff is pretty foreign to me. But I guess for those of you out there that this applies to, I'm sorry. Anyways, what you can do is put salt on icy patches. That's okay also. In other words, if icy patches outside, you want to keep people from falling on their heads, God forbid, you can go ahead and throw a little salt on that, and that's no problem. Now, you can make ice cubes on Shabbat. For Sfardim, Rav Avadia Yosef brings down no problem at all. For Ashkenazim, there's a little bit of hesitation in that there are some Rabbanim that are not permitting this outright unless the situation comes up that you need it for Shabbat and, for example, a major party or something else is coming up and you need additional ice, meaning to fill up the little ice, you know, ice trays and put them in the freezer and that sort of thing. That would, like I said, on a great need, it seems that the majority of Ashkenazi posts can permit this. By the way, of course, if you have one of those electric ice makers, you know, in your freezer, when you take out the ice, there's a little bar there that actually will snap down and tell the machine to start making more ice. So that's a problem. Meaning on Shabbat, you wouldn't be able to use that unless before Shabbat you snapped up the little ice thingy to prevent that from happening. So what you could do is, which a lot of people do, is go ahead and have some ice trays, I mean trays with water, the old-fashioned way to make ice, or take some ice out before and keep it in a bag inside of your freezer. So this way, if you need it, you can grab from there. So this way, you don't run into the situation if you happen to forget to turn around and prepare, meaning to put up the little arm there to prevent more ice from being made when you take out ice. What you also can do is, we just said before, anything that has this idea of adhesion of water in large sums like a sponge becomes a sewer. So, for example, your own hair, if it gets filled up with water, you cannot squeeze it to squeeze out puddles of water from it. But what you would be able to do, though, is you'd be able to wrap a towel even tightly onto the hair so that the water transfers directly from your hair into the towel, and that actually ends up being permissible. So let's go to the don'ts. Of course, we hit on some of them during the do's, but a couple of don'ts. Well, what you can't do is remove the outer green-yellow husk around a coconut. Here in Florida, if you happen to have a coconut tree or other places, it falls there on the ground or else, or even if you have them in your house. Coconuts, they have this little big thick green peel, and then underneath is that brown hard, and then the white nice juicy inside with the little coconut water for Thai cooking on the inside of that. So what happens is that, again, you can't remove that outer part. Peel bark from a reed for basket weaving. And all of us out there are basket weaving on a regular basis, so if you happen to go ahead and pull off the bark in order to weave a basket, that's a problem on Shabbat. You can't squeeze yourself a glass of orange juice. Nope, can't do that. What you could do, interestingly enough, there's a way to make a little bit of lemonade if you need to. What you do is use a lot of sugar, and then you can squeeze lemon juice into the sugar, now enough that there has to be enough sugar to absorb that lemon, and then you can add water after that. The Ben Ish Chai, Rabbi Yosef Chaim, gave a nice little way of remembering that. The Hebrew word sulam, samech lamed mem, in other words, spelled in that way, gives us the secret of all this, meaning start with sukkar, sugar, then limon, then lemon, then em, then mem, then mime, water afterwards. So you would be allowed to do such a thing. Squeeze lemon into tea. That you cannot do. Can't squeeze, because again, you see what happened before is we're talking about squeezing, but it's a solid directly into another solid. And the fact that it was liquid in between is okay, it never collected as a liquid, but you see here you're squeezing a solid into a liquid. And that will be forbidden. But you could allow a little bit of lemon pieces to float inside of your drink, even though juice might seep out into it on its own. What you cannot do is cut up grapes or olives, as we said before. Drink juice that's seeped out of a fruit in a bowl. Say you have this little bowl and you have in it sitting some fruits, some oranges, whatever else have you, and some juice started to collect on the bottom of that bowl. You would not be allowed to drink the juice that collected on Shabbat. That is asur. Can't use that. Squeeze out a rag, we already mentioned. Use a sponge. A sponge is a real nasty little thing because of the fact that they get real saturated, and as soon as you try and touch them, they start to They start to have water squirt out the sides and whatever else have you. So sponges are a problem. If it's got a plastic backing on it, you'd be allowed to go ahead and use it. In other words, to lightly do something and pull it from the plastic backing. But again, better to avoid sponges at all costs. Sponges, in terms of cleaning, if it's got a plastic back, technically, if you don't push the sponge hard, you could actually, you know, clean something with it. But again, it's a very difficult situation. It's much better just to avoid sponges altogether. You can't express milk into bottles, as we said. You can't crush ice. You know, sometimes, especially we've got a fridge that runs real cold, so sometimes you have a pitcher of juice or something else sitting in your fridge, and it forms like a little ice layer across the top of that. That's a problem. that ice layer, you can't break that up. You can let it sit out until it thaws and becomes liquid again, and you can use it, and that's fine. But you wouldn't be allowed to put this next to a heating source or something that would cause this to happen quicker either. You'd even be allowed to go ahead and take out that frozen concentrated orange juice gook and throw it into a thing of water and let it melt there into orange juice. But you wouldn't be allowed to break up that orange mush, in other words, while it's still frozen there, in order to help cause it to thaw quicker. And you just have to let it go until everything worked out, and that'd be fine. You can't make a gel dessert. In other words, those, you know, watch it wiggle, watch it, you know, sort of thing. You cannot use canned spray whipped toppings. What happens is when you get that can of Rich's Whip and you squeeze the top and out spurts the whipped creamish type of thing, what happens is the liquid inside is being propelled out and made into a foam. So that ends up being a problem. And what you can't do is squeeze out wet hair. In other words, as we said before, making little puddles. So with that, we have covered the next three in our list, and God willing, we will move on to the next. And hopefully in a couple weeks, we will be finishing up the whole crash course, getting together all the 39 melachot, and if time is permitting, we'll go on to a couple of other concepts, meaning the major principles and mukseh, the laws of things which are forbidden to move around. God willing, with the additional efforts that we will all be making in the service of Hashem, this will bring great merit to all of us, the entire Jewish people, and God willing, we should see speeding in our days, Mashiach Tzidkenu, Bimera B'Yemenu, Amen.